Okay, this is continuing with Hank Vanderhulst on 6 September 78.
You were talking about...
On the identification of radio sources, the fact that the number of firm identifications, Cas A and Tau A and Sig A and Virgo A,
right,
were objects of such a completely different nature, and that you could easily make the calculation of how invisible a normal radio source like Sign A would be in the optical domain,
mm-hmm,
that did not leave me with a big worry that there was an internal inconsistency.
I see.
Now, of course, a real research scientist should not leave it at that, but should go on and look at alternative models and see, try to narrow down. But I was not at that time working in that line, so my impression is it's okay. So the answer will be found soon or later.
What about the general feeling about the state of the interstellar gas? You've already mentioned about the hot component idea at the Dublin meeting, but how would you say through the 50s in particular that radio astronomy changed our view of the interstellar medium?
Well, I would say extremely strongly. I mean, it has been very important. I mean, in many ways. It's the
But the cloudy nature, for instance, that came from the Dutch hydrogen line work, that had been put forward before from the interstellar optical lines.
Oh yes, but the question was not at all whether it was cloudy, but just how you would describe the cloudiness, whether you could fix real parameters. And I went myself at great length in the, for instance, in the meeting on cosmical aerodynamics, the second one, which was in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
In 57,
In 50... Was that a 57 one?
Yeah, I have a note here.
Or in a 53 one, I don't know. In one of these volumes I went in great length. Oh no, in 57 I went in great length, but in 53 also. And trying to see, so to say, to make a... an interim report on where we would stand if you would tie all the data from optical work and from radio astronomy work together,
mm-hmm,
to see what do we know about the existence of clouds, about their forms, about their motions. But, and that was still pretty depressing. There was lots of data, but they are so... It's obvious that with different instruments you see different things. So the results were not proportional to the effort.
Well, but hasn't this situation, in fact, continued to the present day, and in fact, perhaps even worse now?
I don't know. You see, the problem, I would judge the present situation a little better because partly through the development in the infrared field, we know of more normal and weird objects by direct name, you see. We can point them out. A couple of years ago I was asked to give a review paper on the interstellar matter at a course which Pinkau had arranged. And I gave it a title for Where is the Interstellar Medium?
Yes, because I read that thing,
because I was not too happy with what I could tell there, but the title was simply to show that I did not know, could at that time not identify. If somebody said a molecular cloud, there was a word,
mm-hmm,
and two different authors might mean something entirely different by it. Right now, and after with the infrared work maturing a little, with all the earlier knowledge tied in, I think one could do a better job. And actually, but it's not a simple job.
Anyway, in the 50s, things were not tying together well.
No. Of course, there was this idea that, for instance, the hope that you could do something by making a turbulent spectrum, a new trick, to describe things, and I also went at great length in trying to use test runs which Lex Muller had made to get to try to make a turbine spectrum out of it.
Test what?
Test runs with Dwingeloo.
Oh, I see, with the
Dwingeloo dish. And but I was neither content with the result nor really with the theoretical basis, so I dropped it. But and then later you see some of the things, of course, in the literature. And,
Okay. One final question is. In the COTFIG survey, in which you were very much involved, there was a definite methodology, of course, which goes back to Oort's 1920s work on the differential rotation of the galaxy. How happy were you with it, with that at that time? Did you, in your mind, were there really these streamers, these dense concentrations, or were there ever any nagging doubts about non-circular motions and possibilities of being fooled? The model was very consistent, yeah, but it might be quite inaccurate.
Yeah. No. Well, I would like to correct your first statement.
Yes, go ahead.
I would like to correct your first statement, and to the survey was independent of the model used for, so to say, for analyzing the survey. So the survey was done with great care and is, of course, model independent. But it's then after all the profiles have been cleaned and put together, that you want, in essence, to start to interpret the density distribution in this velocity longitude diagram.
Right.
And there, indeed, I was quite happy, it happened a couple of years earlier, to realize by conversations with Oort how powerful, how far one could get with this simple assumption of circular motions. And so that was really an enormous help to have at least one model which was relatively simple and which could be used. But I never believed the model in the sense of believing that this must be true. The question was whether this was a good first approximation, and that I feel it was and is. Because after all, I was... there was this nice thing that there was very, very little trespassing in the wrong quadrants.
yeah.
And all of these things together count in giving you some confidence in the model.
It looked like a regular motion.
Yes. And
the features looked like spiral features.
Yes, and of course we know that spirals exist in other... all these things help to give you some confidence, but it's mostly the trespassing and the question that, for instance, for the near-solar, in the optical work, it had worked well in the near-solar surroundings. So all of these things together gave fair confidence, and it was also obvious from the very beginning that near the center some things might be wrong.
Well, but in fact, that section was left out.
Yes, well, for observational reasons, that you could not interpret it in that way. We said, well, let's leave it initially out.
Yeah.
And but it was clear enough to me that, and I have later also written that, and probably in the original papers also, that the cloud motion essentially gives a certain convolution, which gives an uncertainty in the distance determination, and in the same way as the antenna pattern gives an uncertainty in the sideways positional determination. And one thing which struck me as a beautiful coincidence was that both these uncertainties were of the order of a couple of hundred parsecs.
They happened to be compatible.
Yes, they happened to be compatible, yeah. And we did not design the wavelengths of the 21 sure. centimeter line, nor the size of the German radar dish, and yet they happened to be compatible.
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, thank you very much again.
That ends the interview with Henk van der Hulst on 6 September 1978 at Leiden.